Growing up, I would hear things about curiosity that were kind of negative. The most famous adage I remember was, "Curiosity killed the cat." I always took this to mean that sticking your nose where it doesn't belong can be detrimental to your health, both physically and mentally. And certainly in a small town, which is where I grew up, having good boundaries is an important way to keep yourself from being drawn into somebody else's drama. But honestly, I think it has little to do with curiosity. These days, I see curiosity being lauded. A quick Google search found these quotes about curiosity. Here are a few of my favorites. William Arthur Ward is credited with saying, "Curiosity is the wick in the candle of learning." I like that one. Zora Neale Hurston said, "Research is formalized curiosity. It is poking and prying with a purpose." And E.E. Cummings said, "Once we believe in ourselves, we can risk curiosity, wonder, spontaneous delight, or any experience that reveals the human spirit." This brings me back to my childhood. You see, I'm clear that one of the things missing for me in my childhood was the belief in myself, or frankly, more to the point, it was the belief that I was worthy of love. Now, I didn't have this because my parents were atrocious. As a matter of fact, I had amazing parents who loved me dearly. And I wasn't a bully, and I wasn't abused. Rather, this belief came from religion. You see, my family of origin was staunchly Lutheran. And as such, it was expected that I would develop a personal, close relationship with Jesus Christ. I went to church every Sunday. I went to vacation Bible school during the summer. I attended Lutheran youth camp as a teenager. I tried. I tried really hard. But the relationship with Jesus, it just never manifested growing up. I never could get past some of the inconsistencies in the church and in the Bible. Maybe I had too much of the cynic in me. Maybe I had too much of the heretic. Maybe I just had too much curiosity. Eventually, during my teenage years, I started embracing that curiosity. A boyfriend at the time was helpful in that he encouraged me to explore books and new ideas in the theater. And this kind of curiosity, this exploration, if you will, it saved my life in a way. I can say without a doubt in my mind that I would not be the same person if I had not met this man. I would certainly not live in Berkeley. I would not be married to my husband, and therefore I would not have my two beautiful children. I wouldn't be a Unitarian Universalist, and I surely would not be standing in front of you preaching. I came from a large conservative family, and within that system, I was the youngest for about 10 years. And because of that, I wasn't taken too seriously. Because of my role as the baby within a family system, and because I often found myself outside of my family's beliefs, I was without a voice unless I was touting somebody else's cause. Several years ago, through my employment at Star King School and through a women's empowerment organization called Women Within International, I found my voice. But that's a different sermon. But it did lead me to attend seminary. And then while I was in seminary, an interesting thing happened. I started the hard work of trying to get real with myself. After all, you can't really minister to other people without knowing where your own buttons are. And that's when I discovered that I have a button about being right. Basically, it was the old, not worthy of love belief raising its ugly head again. You see, I had decided that there was something wrong with me that prevented me from having a personal relationship with Jesus. This is when I was young. I made this decision. It must be me. I mean, Jesus is supposed to be, like, really open to all, right? But I sure wasn't able to connect. So, it must be me. And I reasoned that the only way that I could be worth hanging around with was to be right. At least 80% of the time. About everything. Nothing like setting yourself up, right? But this is basically the opposite of curiosity. But because so much was at stake with me being right, if I wasn't meeting the mark, well, I'd finagle things a little bit. I might fib a little. I might blow up the truth, or I might minimize it. In seminary, I started searching for ways to attend to this aspect of myself, and curiosity stepped in to save my life again. Curiosity became my friend. The first thing that I learned about curiosity was that approaching differences of opinion with curiosity, rather than trying to explain to someone why I think their analysis is wrong, it's a helpful tactic. But being genuinely curious is what made that process work. Now, this is what happens for me. In my life, I will feel pulled towards a way of being. And then I'll come in contact with somebody who can explain why that works. And this was no different. I found myself leaning into the belief that asking questions was a better way of interacting with people. And then I found people like the Center for Courage and Renewal who explain eloquently why turning to wonder is a good plan. This is what they say. Turning to wonder means questioning the source of our own feelings and actions, such as, what does it mean that I associate these two things? Or what events in my past have conditioned me to respond this way? In listening to others, turning to wonder also means resisting the urge to react or jump to conclusions. What does he really mean when he uses that word? Or, I wonder how she became to believe that. End quote. So in other words, when I get curious about something, I examine my resistance instead of the other person's faulty reasoning. And what I notice is that there are several things that happen with this blueprint. First, in order to look at my resistance, I have to fully consider what the other person is saying. I can't be jumping ahead in the conversation and planning what I'm going to say in response. Rather, I have to stay present to them so that I get what they're proposing. And when I open up to the other person's analysis, I find myself being more open to their perspective. The second thing I found is that being curious slows me down because it takes time to hear what the other person is saying, to really hear them. But, and maybe this is the most important thing, it changes the flavor of the relationship. I mean, think about it. What happens when somebody lectures you on the inadequacy of your analysis? I don't know about you, but I pull back. On the other hand, what happens when somebody is vulnerable with you? I lean into that conversation. And really, hearing somebody requires a degree of vulnerability because you might be changed. Now, I imagine that you've heard some of this or maybe all of this before. So why am I bringing it up now? Because I think we're in a scary place in this country. It seems like my Facebook feed is an echo chamber repeating only what I believe. It seems like when I disagree with my family of origin, like if I were to say to them, You know, I hear that a personal relationship with Jesus has served you well, and I'm so grateful for that. But I don't think that's the only way to be in relationship with God. If I say that to them, if I disagree at that level, I'm not met with curiosity. I'm met with a litany of all the reasons why I'm wrong. And frankly, folks, I hear this same approach in UU circles and in other liberal areas of my life. How many people do you know that truly believe that Donald Trump should be impeached, put in jail, or worse, taken out? How many people do you know that can find their curiosity on either side of the aisle for the Black Lives Matter debate? This trend, it frightens me. And I'm not alone. The reading from Brené Brown speaks to her concern about how we seem to be losing our ability to discuss. Now, I have to pause here, and I have to make a caveat and a confession. The caveat is this. I stand before you as a white, privileged, cisgendered, straight woman. I understand the privilege that that affords me. I can take my time when others may not be able to. For example, I know that African American mothers and fathers cannot afford to go slowly in having conversations about how Black lives matter. Their sons, their brothers, their fathers, their uncles are being gunned down at an alarming rate. And I know that my role as an ally to these folks is to express my outrage, to vote with my body in protesting, and to be aware of how racism in the United States plays out again and again and again. I want to be clear that I'm aware that there are places where my words do not fit because of the tragedies that are unfolding. That's the caveat. Here's my confession. I'm not always sure where the boundary is between these two concepts. But a mentor of mine once told me that when things are murky and difficult, and when you're in a situation where you're not sure what the next best right step is, say what you do know. So this is what I know. I know that while I can completely, let me try that again. I know that while I cannot completely understand the outrage of people who live at the margins, it's justified. I know that the way we have been trying to access change is slow. And it seems to me that it leaves people divided into camps. And what I've seen throughout the world is that when, even if the other camp comes into power, it often results in even more carnage. I'm thinking about the civil wars in Rwanda. I know that when people try to fix things by leaning into one another, by trying to feel one another's feelings, by trying to see each other, by trying to hear each other, it has a better chance of success. I'm thinking about the end of apartheid in South Africa. And I know that as a white person in the United States who is able to see some of the pain of those at the margins, it's my responsibility to try to help other white folks see that pain too. But standing in my camp, yelling at the other side about how wrong they are, it isn't working, folks. I know that the world works better when we stop trying to find either-or solutions and we lean into the both-and solutions. My experience tells me that the solutions are not as clear, they take longer, and they evolve over time. But my experience also tells me that those solutions are the solutions that last. Fundamental to all of this, fundamental to all of what I know, is being genuinely curious. I believe the way forward is not only protesting, but is also engaging curiously with those that voted for Donald Trump. This means that I must be genuinely open to the possibility that there is something more I can learn. I believe our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, calls us to allow curiosity back into our lives so that we can begin to see those we so vehemently disagree with. We must engage the worthiness of Donald Trump, even if he cannot engage ours. I must continually try to hear my family of origin, even when they believe that I'm damned. It's what being a Unitarian Universalist is all about. I'm not speaking of being abused by my family. What I am saying is I need to live up to my values. May curiosity become the first spark that lights our way towards those that we disagree with. Amen. Blessed be. Ashe.